I'm just here for the comments, mate. Anyway. Guess who is back like Musana? Yes, for those non-Shona speakers, Musana means back, so who's back? You'll get it anyway. It is the Clubhouse with the one, the only, the main man. His name is Honey Bizzle Balls in it. H to the B. What's up, buddy? How are you doing?
Brilliant. We're out here in the different time zones. Good.
Did you like that intro? That was pretty spot on. Thank you. Thank you very much. And we're also joined by Dragon. So let's get straight. How you doing? Dragon, how are you, buddy? You're right.
I'm good, man. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. You sound all gentrified and stuff. This is brilliant. good to see this side of you. You know, I'm so used to you being such a ruffian and the dodgy character. This is amazing. Well done. Good man. Seems like you're improving. I'm very happy with that. I shall not introduce myself because there's no need to. I am the man with no name. Anyway, let's get stuck into it, right? What a weekend of rugby. I mean, with the World Cup looming, we're back from our hiatus. Before I even talk about the weekend, we're back from our hiatus for a limited time only. Sorry to all our biggest fans, Flippity Floppity. That lost dude who supported the Aussies. Please, can we bring him on?
Is he still alive?
No,
he's probably slit his wrist right now.
Please, can we bring him on? He needs to come on because I think it's just going to be like 2 hours of being roasted. But anyway, Matt, wherever you are, guys, we're back. And let's just get stuck into it. Oh, please, no, actually, can we never. Matt is not allowed to speak to anybody. Please, that guy will be insufferable, given what happened on Friday.
He's going to meet Dragon somewhere and rant for him.
I'm not trying to meet any Bok fans. I'm just going to be honest. I'm going to put it out there.
Yeah, well, you know, it is what it is, man. Take your beating like a man. Anyway, let's get stuck straight into it. Dragon, what did you think of the rugby this weekend?
Well, everything except for Friday was great to watch. Look, the Fiji-England game, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Enjoyed that. Fiji came out there to play. They didn't look out of sorts. They were just there competing at that level, which was impressive. I think that for me was the highlight of the weekend. The Samoa game also bloody good. They just couldn't get it over the line, but I enjoyed that as well. They were very competitive, and it's good to see as we lead into the World Cup because, yeah, I mean, and as much as everyone's been talking about how the one side of the competition is the most competitive, I think this kind of changes up that argument, at least from a competitiveness in the pool section of it, because no one's guaranteed that they're going to make it, they're going to have an easy ride, and that's always great to watch. And we may have a couple of different teams in those knockout games, eh?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, fair enough. Good summation. I think we'll delve into that a little bit deeper into those fixtures in a second. I just want to talk about the hot topic at the moment in terms of player safety and the referees. Bit stop start. I mean, that first half on Friday night was over an hour. It was mind-numbingly boring, but. I mean, and it has the potential to spoil things as a spectacle a little bit. We won't even talk about the fuss that's the Owen Farrell, Billy Vunipola situation.
We need to talk about
that. But HB, what do you think? What do you think of the officials and what's happening to the game? Positive, negative? Is this going to make the World Cup really contentious issue for us? Is it going to be one of those where now it's all up to the ref, really? On the day to see who gets the rub of the green. What are your thoughts, HB?
I think world of rugby needs to sort out this these calls, because there's a double standard in how they are calling their their penalties and how they're finding people, how the referees are dealing with matches. It's really not set. Today, if you get the wrong ref, everything is going wrong. Tomorrow morning, you get up, it's someone else, and it's clinically the same offenses that are being judged differently by different refs. And to me, it's going to cause a lot of controversy during this upcoming World Cup. If it doesn't cause controversy, it will cause a slow rate of flow in the game where every 3 seconds we're going to check with the fifth umpire to see what's going on. Was that really an offense? You know, it's not going to allow things to flow.
I think, you know, it's funny you should say that about consistency. I mean, there's one incident that comes to mind from the weekend when Albert Tuisui, I think, he caught an overthrow from the lineouts, went in to make a carry, but I mean, he got hit, he got belted high by Joe Mahler. And it's funny when you think about the gamesmanship that happens in terms of the replays that they show in the stadium, because Jaco Pyper was like, no, I just looked at it briefly on the replay. Nothing happened. But you think when someone has gone down with a head knock after making a carry, that surely it's due diligence to actually check it out and have a look. And there were a lot of instances like that where there was not as much consistency as I thought there should have been. So from my point of view, I just think the last thing and the beauty that there was about rugby, but our sport in particular, was that it's not a soap opera. It's not a daytime soapy where you're now all having, where it relives on controversy. The sport should never thrive on controversy. It should thrive on skill, athleticism, and almost a celebration of these athletes and what they're doing for their countries. You know, that's what we should be talking about brilliant pieces of skill, not debating on the decisions of referees, which unfortunately, no, that's what we've come to. You know, it's a bit worrying. From my end, it's a bit worrying in terms of what the World Cup could become. We don't want a game. We don't want a quarterfinal to be decided by a red card or a yellow card. We don't want that. You know, nobody wants that.
Yeah, I think, you know what, the problem at the moment is the game has got so many elements that have come into it, right? So we're talking about the match officials. That's one side of it. One of the things that definitely reared its ugly head was on Friday night, players. And a lot more players are trying to be vocal to tell the ref that they should review certain incidences and things like that. I think that's also an element that's crept into the game. Then thirdly, now, the broadcasters have also started to have an influence on the game. Yeah. There's a number of instances where, I'm not saying it's a good thing that the ref would have missed it, but there's a number of incidences where, and again, this may have an influence in terms of whether or not it benefits a home side or whatever it is. The broadcasters happen to replay a controversial moment or something that they've picked up as they were going through something. The ref happens to have a glance at the big screen and notices it, and suddenly we're reviewing things. I mean, we've moved away from where the man in the center controlled everything and used to run the game, and all of these elements have come in and brought in all of this controversy, and it's ruining it. It's making it very stop start, and it's taking away attention from the game in its purity. So yeah, I don't know. It's worrying. Okay. But
all right, hold on. Let me play devil's advocate here. You, and because I played with you, so I know, you used to whinge and whine a lot about any off-the-ball stuff that happened. Did you not?
No.
Oh, okay, fine. We'll pretend that you're the hard man that you claim to be. You can't blame Malcolm Marx for telling this captain, like, hey, bro, talk to the ref here. This guy just shouldered me to the face. That was a particularly dumb piece of play.
That was the worst thing that Scott could have done, and I'm not actually referring to that incident. One I've got no issue with that, and I actually thought that was ridiculous by Scott Barrett, and I've just read now that he's been cleared and he'll be playing in the first game. To be honest, that's ridiculous. Part of the inconsistency that we're talking about. But I think throughout the game, if you rewatch it, you'll see a number of times where there's constant requests to review. And I hate to bring up one player in particular that I've noticed, and since he's kept in the team, I've noticed him chirping a whole lot more, or talking to the ref, not chirping, but rather talking to the ref a whole lot more than he used to. And that's Bongi. And you watch the game again, and you just see him. No, oh, ref this, ref that, and you know it's maybe I'm annoyed. But
he's the captain, man. He's one of the. He was the on-field captain.
I know, but fuck, man. Let the game go on.
Let a brother shine.
I'm a big fan of his, right? But I mean, we need to now. What I want to see is I want us to go back to more time being spent playing rugby than all of these little debates that are happening during a game. And it's not only him, to be fair. It's across all the teams. I think I've even caught RD a couple of times where he does it quite a fair bit.
I believe that as a player, if the ref is not actively paying attention, or he's not seeing things as they happen, you're going to want him to review stuff. But refs are doing that because they are lacking consistency. They are not doing what they're supposed to do. I don't know if World Rugby is giving them leeway to be left and right and to lean wherever they feel things should go, but it's bad. And players are going to call it out because if something happens, the ref doesn't do anything about it. What do you do?
Is it the refs alone, or is it also there's elements as well in that have crept into the game? Elements in terms of small little things that teams are doing and that are giving them ascendancy. I mean, again, I'm not going to say, I don't want to sound biased, but I think there was a video that was going around about one of the tries the Springboks scored. And on review, Dwayne was on the ground. RD was about to shift over to cover the space close to the rack. And Dwayne went and tripped up RD. You know, like intentionally held him back and brought him to ground. And he was on the ground. In normal circumstances, that would be a penalty. You look at it, and I'm going to say it, even the All Blacks, if you look at, they tend to roll in a certain direction. I'm not saying, you know, you're training some of these things. They're these little, small, subtle things that are coming into our game where we are trying to slow down or disrupt the opposition's flow. So you get guys that roll negatively as instead of positively and try and slip up a scrummy. So these are all little elements that make a difference for a team, right? That, yes, when you get away with it, it's fine. But now, suddenly, because there's all of this emphasis on foul play, we're having to, the ref takes all the slack for missing such subtle thingies, subtle incidences, yet we are bringing it into the game.
I think, look, they've always been there. They've always been in the game. You always have guys cleaning deep for a particular reason, you know, not to ensure you get quick ball or anything like that, but you guys getting the cleaning deep so that they're actually stopping the defense from folding around the ruck. They have to take a longer route when they fold and things like that. So they're all these little things, you know, done under the guise of gamesmanship. Not that I agree with it at all. Yeah, but they do. I mean, we all know Crusaders. The Crusaders were known for that. They were famous for that. They for rolling out the rug the wrong way. You know, they're all these bits and pieces of play. And sometimes the ref sees them, sometimes the ref doesn't. But this is where the ARs come into play, right? The ARs and the TMO, this is where they really come into play. I just think that a lot of situations, you have to be a bit more decisive a bit earlier. Because when you see that clearly someone's shouldered someone to their head, why are you looking at it from 15 different angles? You clearly see. And I think where the biggest issue is, and again, it pains me to agree with certain people about this, is that the whole concept of a red card, of a permanent red card, is a problem. I honestly think the 20-minute red card is the way to go. Simply because this is all happening because your refs are so afraid, and they must be absolutely 100% sure, beyond reasonable doubt. This thing of beyond reasonable doubt or clear and obvious, it also is a bit murky, right? Because if you look at George Ford's try, Marcus Smith's try at the weekend, he was in front of the kicker. He was in front of the kicker, but they gave him the try because they said, oh no, there was not clear and obvious. So what? He must be a meter in front of the kicker. He was in front. You know what I mean? So we also need to, sometimes there should be a trusting of instinct as well. I mean, that was clear. He was in front, but because he wasn't obviously beyond a reasonable doubt in front, you're like, come on, mate.
Because he plays for England and anything else, but...
Okay, let's take the conspiracy theory out of it. But, you know, and that's the thing, is that there's this element of fear, because when you know that you take away a particular, that you give someone a red card in the 30th minute or whatever, that's it, they're gone, you know? And now the results will ultimately be swayed. Hugely. And so I think there needs to be something to give these refs, because I don't think there's a lot of confidence.
That's from where I'm seeing. You've taken the confidence from there, right? The you know, like the controversy that has been around referees, and particularly after 2019, has really taken away their confidence, because you're getting scrutinized, and rightfully so, right? Because the same pressure that players are under to say, okay, fine, this is your call it your day-to-day job. We expect you to perform. That same pressure is given to referees now, you know, and there's a whole lot more scrutiny around them.
Who's the South African ref? He was a really good ref. And he was refing, what was it, Scotland, Australia. Remember, when it was clearly offside. Like the Scottish guy knocked it on, the guy in front of him picked the ball up. It was offside. And then Australia got the penalty. It was a World Cup quarterfinal, I think. Australia nailed the penalty. And then it was Craig Joubert. And then he ran off the field. And that was it. He was done with the referee. He was done.
He took that hard. He took that pretty bad.
He was done because he got it bad. But, dude, that was the call to the letter of the law. You know, that was the call. It was offside. You know, same thing as the British and Irish Lions tour. Same issue.
To win.
Don't you remember? It was an accidental offside, and then he gave a penalty. He gave a scrum instead of a penalty, but it was offside. It should have been a penalty. And then the one thing refs are not actually policing well is the jumping into a tackle. And I will blame this on Johnny May's try. When Johnny May, do you remember that try? When everyone was like, oh, this is amazing athleticism. How are you going to tackle him legally? When he dives that high in the air, what are you going to do? Because if you push him into touch while he's in the air, it's a penalty.
It's a bit of a difficult one. I mean, the game has become so difficult to police, and I don't blame referees. I think we're very much in a transition period, and our laws have always been they're left to the individual's interpretation. And that's what kind of sucks. But I mean, you know what? Look, let's call a spade a spade. Those talking points are the reason why we enjoy sports at the best of times. You know, it's not always the best when you lose, but when you're on the receiving end of that one, I don't want to call it a bad decision, but one controversial decision, and it goes, you enjoy it.
No, man, I beg to differ. This isn't soccer, Mdare. We're not going to be here complaining about, did he make contact or not? No, come on. No.
But
no.
We're already there.
We don't enjoy this. Who enjoys? Like, honestly, have you gone? If you look at, and on any form of social media, the absolute vitriol that these supporters have arguing against each other over stuff, and you're like, guys, we're now placing so much attention on this. Let's focus some attention onto how good the Box were on Friday. Yeah, let's call it. They stuck to their plan and they stuck to it very well. And they played well. They played as well as they possibly could have played on Friday. But yet now we're nitpicking on all these little things. We should actually be saying Caden Moody had, apart from a couple of missed tackles, one on Cam Røygaard actually.
Yeah.
Had an amazing
Willem was shocking.
Pardon?
Willemsa missed him there badly. Like, okay, Moody did, but yes, Willemsa was shocking that play. He was absolutely horrific.
I tell you, man, that Moody kid is some player, boy. I'm telling you, that kid is gonna be, that's 100. He's got 100 caps written all over him, especially at outside center, because defensively, for someone so young to be so smart and so astute defensively, that is rare. His defensive positioning is absolutely spot on. I mean, yeah, I get Rico didn't get much ball. Let's be fair, he didn't get much good ball, but boy, oh boy, did Moody just get positioned himself well. He's still young, so sticking and hitting and making and that collision he still needs to work on, but man, just he's in the right place at the right time, 80% of the time. When you're 20 years old and you're playing at the highest level, that is phenomenal.
He's not a small boy either. I mean, he's quite a big body. And yeah, like you said, he handled himself well.
Yeah,
He's
got the build of the modern day 13, which is what you want. You want someone who's got some decent height and he's a rangy runner with really good speed endurance. The difference, and I debated with someone the other day, why I feel that Caden Moody is more of a natural 13 than, say, a Jesse Creel, is simply when you look at the, one, the build, two, look at the power output in terms of explosiveness. Jesse Creel is explosive, without a shadow of a doubt. 10, 15, 20, 30 meters. He can explode. But where Moody has him in terms of being a 13, when you just look at naturally, look at how Moody is just built for gliding into that outside arc through that natural sort of seam of weakness in the defensive line. And also in not even just the arc, but the speed endurance, because he can maintain his top speed for longer. Jesse might get to top speed quicker, but you can tell straight away Moody can maintain his top speed for longer. Because that finish, when he towed it out of Rico Ioane's hands, that finish was insane. That was great.
That was brilliant, yeah. I mean, he's got a lot of good subtle touches as well. You know, things that, I mean, there was that one that round the back pass that he put in, you know, and you look at it, he was almost falling. He gets his hands on that ball, has the presence of mind to think, okay, fine, I'm about to fall over and I've got a player in front of me. How am I going to get that continuity? Still in that play, fends off the player, well, not fends him properly, but holds him off, gives that pass around the back, and it was that split-second decision-making. That's impressive, dude. And
yeah, I'm telling you, they're cooking something there in Paul. I'm telling you, man, they've got some, there's some talent that comes from that area. I mean, it's phenomenal. I mean, if you look at Kurt Lee, RNC, you look at Caden Moody, you look at, I think Manny Lubok is also from Paul. Like, you're like, hey. If he's from Paul and he either wears a scrum cap or he's tall, you're in trouble, bro. Just understand you're in trouble.
That scrum cap is becoming a signal of problems.
Yeah. Speaking of which, actually, Speaking of problems, before we actually delve into a bit more, just a quick recap of the matches this weekend. What do you guys make of Apiru Ajanti coming back?
Yeah.
I think that's a good thing.
Exactly.
I'm happy for him. I don't think, you know, we all make mistakes. I don't think anyone should ever be closed out. Particularly,
I have a comment about that.
He was young. So let's give him the benefit of the doubt. He made some bad choices and he's back. I just don't know. I really want to see, and I don't, everyone's trying to see whether or not, you know, because of the fact that he was banned for substances, people all think that there was nothing behind this guy, but I think there was a whole lot more to him. And it wasn't just down to performance enhancers. It was him and the work he did put in. And I think if he did use his time wisely, he probably is going to come back and should probably be, you know, try to prove a point. And we may find him back in the mix somewhere.
No, I'm excited. And I'm excited for him. I'm excited to see him getting back into it, getting stuck in, because that dude was fire. I'm really excited. And in terms of, I mean, look, I'm not even going to name names. There were dudes who've been popped multiple times. You know, I mean, it's okay. I mean, it happened. It is what it is. I'm not condoning it, but he's done his time out, right? Give him a chance. Give him a chance to get back in clean, make sure he's clean, and just make him try and just see what he can do. Speaking of which,
hold on.
Reese Webb got what?
About a period. I think we had a chance when he was, before he got banned, we had a chance to see him and Mapimpi as the two wings doing something incredible for SA, and we lost that opportunity. Now, when you've got your Kenan Moody's, your Aaron Sands, and all these guys, you're seeing this, the back three that SA has now, this new back three, is going to be something incredible for the World Cup. But we had that same opportunity the last World Cup. But unfortunately, substance abuse and man was banned.
But let's be honest. Let's be honest, right? This current back three that they've got this year, do you honestly think they'll be together next year?
Next year, I think they will.
Aronso will stay in the mix. I don't see Colby really staying in the mix.
Which back three is HB referring to? Maybe let's start
there. That's the question. Yeah, because there's a couple. Yeah.
Which back three?
I'm referring to Colby, Aronso, and the gentleman who's now playing 15. The
new Willemsa.
Willemsa, yes. Willemsa, of course, is doing his 10 thing as well. I don't really think he will stay in the 15. But the two wings that we have there, we had a chance to see that in the past, in the last World Cup, when Mapimpi was on the one side and you had Apiru on the other side. Yes, but we didn't get that opportunity because, well, you know, he was taking the good stuff.
I'm gonna be controversial here. I would be controversial. And I'll tell you, that back three won't stay the same because I think Aronso will stay. Yeah. I think Colby will be like, look, I'm two World Cups, you know, that I've participated in. I've won one. Sly dig day.
Wow.
I've won one.
Are you calling it right now?
I made some money in France, but time to, you know, make a bit more money and retire, because you can only kick that can so far down the road. Phenomenal player. Or maybe go try out for the Olympics. You know, I see Colby stepping away in the future. And I also don't see Damian Willemse sticking it out at 15 for much longer, because, and I, once again, very controversial of me, that dude could do wonders at 12. He's not a small guy.
He's gonna end up there.
People underestimate how big that dude is. That guy is a big body. He is a big guy. He's not obviously like you know, it's not obvious like Esterhazen, this monstrous size, but he's not a small guy. And I just think His ability is right by the gain line. His ability to change angles by the gain line. And he's also explosive as well. Over that first 10 meters, 10, 15 meters for that level, that top of the top, I mean, he's perfect. He's got the distribution skills. He's got the kicking skills. He's got the communication defensively. He's no slouch in the front line. He's no slouch. So I actually see his future at 12. I'd like to see 10, 12, 13 with Libok, Willemse, and Moody. I would have loved to have seen Rohan Jansen and Rensburg get a shout or get a chance, but unfortunately that ship has sailed. But anyway, look, enough Springbok talk.
One more thing. Is Kobe not out of France now?
I think he's left. I think he's still looking for a new club.
Yeah,
I know. I know the Stormers tried to lure him back, but apparently he's adamant that he does not want to come back here or something of that sort.
Yeah, so, I saw a post on Instagram that you were saying, thank you, France, it's been great, da 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 da, but
no,
I was told it's business as usual.
Japan. He's going to Japan.
He'll go to Japan. He'll make his money, and fair play to him. He's had a phenomenal career, stellar career, especially when people were like, maybe he needs to play scrum half to make it. But he's done job, you know. I think he goes to the Olympics. He pushes for a gold medal, which would be a great way to go out and then just make your money in Japan, buddy. Rake it all in Japan. Yeah, because, I mean, he's got three kids, I think. And if you look at, and the Stuart Hogg retirement was just an insight into what it must be like for these guys, you know?
Oh, listen, okay, we won't go in depth with that one, but
we need to touch that one at some point.
Another version of that one, and yeah.
There'll always be other versions.
That retirement was, yeah. There's a story around that. I guess we can't really, it's not, you know, it becomes speculation.
Hey, you are allowed to say allegedly.
You know, the thing is, I don't want to, you know, who knows, man? I don't want to, you know, let's leave it. Let's leave it.
You're allowed to say allegedly.
No, I know we can't say allegedly, but this is, it goes, it's quite a deep story, and it may affect, it affects other people, you know. So rather than it's not just Stuart Hogg himself.
Yeah. So on the subject of doping, of course, our favorite,
the repeat offender,
Mr. Yankees got caught.
Yankees
got popped. Mr. Yankees got popped. Yeah, dude, man, it's really sad. It's sad watching someone's career go down like that.
He's a
great player, man. Played in three Super Rugby finals, you know? And, man, it's just sad, you know? I feel bad for the guy.
Yeah.
But pressure, you know, this is a problem with pro sport, right? And he has asked for them to test his B sample just to make sure. But, you know, when you think about it, you think about what happened with his career. And again, it's no one else's fault but his. That happened a couple of years back. And what happened around then, it really took him out of, he lost a lot of respect within rugby circles. And, you know, I'm just trying to think, you know, devil's advocate again. The guy needed to find his way back, right? And I don't know if he did take it. Allegedly, he did. He was under pressure to try get back to the top. And if this is your livelihood, right? This is now just beyond the fans and whatever. This is how you put food on the table. He wasn't playing any. Remember, he tried to go to Japan, that fell apart. He went to France, and he was in France up until this year. And in France, I think he was playing second division.
D2, because that's how they got popped. Because, you know, the French are strict about that. Huh? They're very, 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 very strict about their testing because it's a federal crime in France.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And, you know, so I can imagine the pressure he was under. I'm not saying when you're under pressure, make stupid decisions. But, yeah, man, it's a terrible spiral. And, you know, I still do wish him all the best. He's still very talented. He's still very fit as well. Okay. I mean, that and what we're talking about, you know, you can't separate. You can't really separate the two. But I do still wish him the best. And I hope that, you know, at least he is able to continue.
He's very fit. I wonder why.
Open has had a bad run of things.
Wow.
Right. So let's talk about the rugby over the weekend. I'd like to go in reverse order. So the last game of the weekend, the calamity that is going on with Australia right now. Man, oh, man.
What calamity? We foretold this rubbish. We foretold this rubbish 3 years ago, and all the Aussie fans refused to listen to us.
Unpopular opinion.
We told them that, guys, Chinjais and Zenis, they refused to listen to us. We told them.
Unpopular. Very unpopular.
They were... Yeah. Look, this team... This Wallabies team... is not for this World Cup. It's for the next one. But the problem is, you're building combinations and so on, but you got to be measured, right? You want to build combinations and win, not build combinations and get clapped. And, I mean, because there's enough there. There's enough talent there. I mean, like, Nawanga Nitawazi is, he's a problem. Kelewe is a problem. Problem. That looks like a guy who's got shit banter, but he's a problem. Jordan Pataya, good player. They miss the person they're really missing is Lenny Kitau. They are missing Ikitau. And I remember I said this. I said it. The best midfield partnership they could possibly have right now is Karevi and Ikitau. It's the best.
I do agree with you.
Balanced midfield.
But what are they meant to do? The guys are unavailable, right? So,
yeah.
Eddie, Eddie, I'm not a big fan of his, to be honest. I just think, you know, everyone says he's being intentional about it to take attention away from the team. But look, I think Australia, the way his behavior. It is him losing his head like he's been doing over the last couple of weeks. In his interviews. So Australia are unfortunate because they've suffered quite a number of injuries, right? Yes, their trajectory wasn't looking very promising, but there is a lot to work off. However, I don't know if you'd remain, you know, as optimistic if you kept getting Chaiwad. You know, here you are at 18 and all you know is hiding. And this is what's happening, you know. And what for me, what really hurts, like I'm watching yesterday's game. So just some quick stats, right? From visits to the 22, 12, okay, points per visit, one point per visit. Time spent in opposition 22, 5 minutes
total.
Yes. France in total spent 2 minutes 29 in their 22. Right? But what did they do? They scored. They made sure they converted. Now, it's actually terrible because if you look at the game against the All Blacks, that was Australia. They play, they get into that 22 and suddenly they lose creativity. They can't breach that line. You know, and that's been their story from a rugby championship. Now it's just continuing on. And I don't think it helps that you don't have a recognized kicker because, you know, just when you feel you can edge closer or even build a bit of a lead, you miss all of your bloody kicks. You get what I'm saying? You're building no pressure whatsoever. It's absolutely...
Carter Gordon is a fantastic player. I rate the guy really highly, but... Yeah, man, you've got to, this is a World Cup, guys. This is for the now. Be intentional, and then you've got to be intentional. And you know, yes, Sonny Bill came out and said it, and people are saying, yeah, but that's because him and Greg Cooper are mates and so on and so forth, which is true. But the reality of it is, this guy's goal kicking is not great.
That's bad, bro. I think I could kick better, bro.
It's not great, but the difference between, because Libox wasn't great either, but the difference is that when you're on a winning run, you get more shots, right? You get what I'm saying? You get more shots at goal. When you're playing with a team that's doing well, that's for a lot of the time playing quite well, you're behind, you know, you've got the confidence behind you. That's why he didn't miss a kick at the weekend.
Yeah.
You know? That's the difference. Connor Gordon is a good player, very good player, but he's playing in a losing team. So it's difficult to get up for that kick, and especially because, I mean, what is he? The kid's 22? Well, that's young. That's really, really young. And it's difficult to actually build any momentum in your performances when you're under the cosh like that. For Naonga Nitawaze, it's easy. He's a winger, right? Like, it's, dude, just give me the ball and run. You know what I mean? But for Carter Gordon, it's difficult. And that's where you need someone like Craig Cooper, who has more experience, who's got a calmer head, better control of emotion, and being able to actually slot those kicks. And I get what Eddie was trying to do, but at the same time, dude, look what's happened. Now you're 0-5, you know? And it's just, yeah, you've got egg on your face. It's really, I can imagine that it's a tough changing room to be in. But also, I think, you know, there's enough, when you've got so much youth, there's that folly of youth, that sort of ignorance of, nah, whatever, so what? And they try and brush it off. But I think for guys like, for the game drivers, that's in the back of their heads, you know, in the back of their minds that, damn, we need to win, we need to do this, we need to do that. They're not just playing. And that's the problem at the moment, you know. So anyway, moving on from one catastrophe.
Just a quick one. Remember that in as much as winning can be a habit, so can losing.
I won't talk about my beloved Chiefs when Warren Gatland, true to form, came and then they just went a whole season without winning a game. My goodness, that was painful.
The inclusion of Steve Hansen is going to help the Wallabies anyway.
Steve Hansen is just a mate helping a mate. He's not wearing any Wallaby gear. He's not taking any serious sessions. He's just a mate helping a mate. I think it'll help, but only sort of surface level.
They need to get rid of some of the stupidity, dude. And that's the problem. There's so much stupidity in that team. And from players that are seasoned, that really, it irks me, right? I mean, Taniela Tupou, you're defending, you've got them pinned in their half. What do you decide to do? And you know what, and I know that a lot of coaches will say that, you know, every player in the team is a, call it a fetcher, that like we used to call it back in the day. He's on his bloody knees. On his knees. He's made a hit. He's on his knees. And what does the idiot try and do? He tries to pick up the ball and jackal.
I don't think it's stupidity. It's desperation. And that's the problem, where you're falling into desperation when you shouldn't be falling into desperation.
Pick moments, dude. You've got to pick it. And you cannot be that desperate to put yourselves into that position. They were not down by, I think they were down by 3 points at that time.
Mate, you want to see desperate? I mean, you're saying pick your moves, but like, dude, everybody, that happens to people. When you, they're human, right? He's human. When you're desperate to make a difference, when you're desperate, I mean, just switch the lights on in a nightclub at 4 a.m. then it's closing. Then you will see desperation. You're like, bro, you're better than this. Or, hey, lady, you're better than this. Look at this guy, got no teeth. You know, but like, that's what it is. I mean, desperation does that to people. It does funny things to you. And for Taniela, I'm not defending him. I'm just helping you understand the psyche of it. The psyche of, I've got to try and make a difference. And it ends up you making bad decisions. Bad decisions.
That's actually
And that's the environment that's being created, an environment that's run by desperation. And that in itself becomes a problem, right? It becomes a problem, a serious problem. Now, again, from one catastrophe to the other. Them dudes were humbled at Twickenham. Oh, my gosh. I think the whole world English rugby supporters were so happy. Well done. But to quote the great Nate Diaz, I ain't surprised, motherfuckers. I ain't surprised, bro. I don't know about you, but I'm not surprised.
You know what the thing is? It's not one thing because there's a shitload wrong.
Right?
There's a shitload that's wrong. We're talking about England, right? Because Twickenham had two disasters.
we'll start with that one. We'll finish with the All Blacks.
Okay, so you look at the selection of that team. You just start there and you see that there's a bloody problem. And I had an argument with a mate around this. And I said, you know, the fact that Billy Vunipola, good player in his prime, was unstoppable. The fact that he found himself back in that side and starting, for me, raises massive, massive, massive questions. Questions around, are we bending the rules for certain players only, and some players are not really liked within the camp? Because I see Willis. It is Willis. Hey, Jack. No, it's not Jack. What's it? The six. Am I right? He's got the brother that played hooker. Can't remember. You find him playing. He left the Wasps. Of course, the Wasps were closed down and whatever. And then he moved over to France. He's recalled. You got a Sam Simmons. You've got Mercer that are playing in France and playing unbelievable, unbelievable rugby, dude. And you don't call them up. What is your excuse? What is your excuse for such poor decisions? It doesn't make sense to me, you know. I'm sitting here and I'm trying to think, what the hell? Then you look at the center pairing. Now, maybe because he's of the time he spent in New Zealand, I kind of had a soft spot for Marchant, but I actually think the guy is bloody decent. But he's never given the proper opportunity to prove himself. It's always half a chance there, another half there. He's never going to improve if you don't give the guy a full shot, right? But you're there busy picking all sorts. Tuilagi, he is spent, guys. Let's face it. The world can no longer, unless he's Damian Dierlander and Andre Esterhazen with a pack that, you know, breaks you to pieces and all you do is you're going backwards, so these guys have an impact. He's not the same player he used to be, right? Let's accept it. Let's stop this thing of hoping that a guy will find form that he has been unable to find due to injury. Unfortunately, in his case, it's a lot of injuries in that. He's not just suddenly going to wake up and start playing great. Give the guy, tell him, here we go, China, just sit it out.
China, just sit it out, China.
It's hard, dude. I watched that England side and I think this cannot be the same team that knocked New Zealand out of that in the semis.
It can be. And you know why I say that?
Yeah.
It proves that they haven't evolved. They haven't evolved. They have not. Hey, it's sad, man. Like it's.
Dane Cole. Dane Cole is still in that side. How, Sway?
We got beast, the answers, Dragon.
Beast bitch.
There's no one better.
That's what sucks. That's the problem.
There's nobody better. Yeah.
I just
it's a definite worry in that And I just don't understand, man, because they've got good structures. They've got the best structures in the world. Essentially, they're not lacking in terms of money. They just haven't evolved. I don't think they've evolved. And some selections, you don't have dogs in that team. You know, you don't have dogs. Where's the Tom Curry of this world? The Sam Underhill. Those are dogs. Those are guys you need to win a World Cup. You know, I mean, look, yeah. I mean, even Sam Simmons. There were times when Ludlam got space on the edge with about 10 meters to run, but he got shut down and he got carved. He got hacked down. If that was Sam Simmons, that would have been a try, buddy. You know what I mean? It also boils down to selection. It boils down to selection. And it also, I mean, yeah. Borthwick did great to get Leicester Tigers to where they were, but they needed to be patience. Because again, now people are calling for this dude's head. He is not a bad coach. What he achieved at Leicester Tigers shows that he's a good coach. He's a damn good coach. But there's a difference between the Premiership, winning the Premiership, winning Europe, then get the job. It's simple. They didn't take him through the progression. And that's where, and the problem is, you don't take him through the progression. You pile all this expectation and all this pressure on the guy. What do you think is going to happen? He's going to stand there sounding like a clueless oaf, which he does at the moment, because they're not, they rushed him and they weren't patient enough. Same thing with Stuart Lancaster. They weren't patient with Stuart Lancaster. Do you know what Lancaster goes and says? Oh, okay. You guys think Magapenga. Let me go to Leinster and let me prove to you how good I am. And look at the difference. Look at the difference that guy made at Leinster. You know? So, yeah, England are in a lot of trouble, man. Now, they are in a lot of trouble. But I also think they need to be realistic with themselves and not be like, oh, my God, we lost to Samoa, to Fiji. It's such a tragedy. What an upset. No. If you have been watching the top teams, the top leagues in the world, there's Fijians in the top teams in the top leagues. There's a Fijian there. There's a Fijian there. And they're bloody performing. I mean, they should be lucky. They should be thanking their lucky stars Levani Bottia wasn't playing on Saturday. They should be thanking their lucky stars that he wasn't playing and that Tuisova wasn't playing either.
But I think that's just the thing, right? It's also very easy to gloss over what Fiji actually have done by criticizing the selections and so on from an English perspective. But you cannot, you know, Fiji, they looked really good. They played really well. Their performance was up there, dude. Their performance was up there. And these sides that were always deemed to be, you know, second tier sides are now proving more and more that they got players that can play. They just need more time together, and that's been the problem.
I think it's
been the issue.
I think it's absolutely laughable and downright disrespectful for people to even say shock win, shock loss to a tier two side. They pushed France. They pushed France. Yes, it was France without DuPont, but it was still France.
Yep.
And until what's his name? Makalu got that intercept. Things weren't. It was tight. And as also, while people say, yeah, France were without, however many were without DuPont, Fiji were without six of their frontline players. Did not play against France. Tell me that they're tier two. Tell me that they're tier two, and I will tell you that you are insane. This is not the Fiji before the Drua played in the NRC. Remember, they played in the NRC first season. They got to the semis. They played the second season, they won the bloody thing. They get to play Super Rugby, Pacific, first season, getting tired. Second season, these guys made the playoffs. But when you play them in Fiji, you knew you were going to get cut to pieces. And you get caught up. They've got guys, and they have built depth. That's what I'm loving about this Fiji side at the moment. One, they've built depth. Two, they've sorted out their set piece. And three, thank goodness they did this, because it's something that they've needed to do for the past 15, 20 years. They sorted out their discipline. They sorted out their discipline. One yellow card. One. This entire five games they played, one yellow card.
When is that ever? You would have had like the whole team on yellows by now.
Yeah. When have you ever seen that from a Fiji side?
That's rare. It's rare. Yeah. They're getting it together.
And look, Caleb Munts. You know, Simon Raolui got a fair share of stick for not picking Ben Velavola. But Caleb Munts is built for this. He's played under pressure, and he's performing under pressure. His goal kicking is, he's building scoreboard pressure. He's building on-field pressure with his positional kicking. That is the key now with Fiji. I really hope that they kick on. I hope that they belt Wales. I hope they belt them.
Well, that doesn't seem like it's going to be very hard to do. I just, you know. There's also a disaster there.
I think with Wales, and the sad part is that, so for those who don't know much about defense in rugby, and especially at this level, generally you play with 12 guys in your front line. You've got 12 defenders in your front line. You've got your scrum half in behind. Sorry, you've got 10 in your front, 11 in your front line. You've got your scrum half in behind, and you've got your three guys in the backfield working a pendulum system, covering space in the backfield. So you've got 11 players in your front line. Generally, if you say tackler and maybe tackle assist, that leaves you with nine players in your front line, generally. So when England had their three yellow cards, right?
Yeah.
What's 9 minus 3?
6.
They had 6 players in the front line. Maybe, let's call it 7, because then you have to bring someone up into the front line, be it the scrum half or one of the guys in behind, right? You had 7, at most 8 players in your front line. And Wales played with zero creativity. No ball out the back, no ball in the boot, nothing.
They were
just running into people. And you're like, hello. There's not one. And this is where Wales are going to struggle, is that they only try and play with deception off set piece when they're playing a strike play or set piece. That's when they'll try a loop or a ball in behind, but it's still exceedingly basic. It's still
too basic, dude. It's too basic
for this level. There are no layers. So they've got sort of like an attack with no layers. No layers. It's just one layer, in fact. You need to have multiple layers in your attack, multiple waves, you know, to create some form of
interest to defend. Shoulder.
Sorry?
They're the easiest team to defend, dude.
Yeah, and it was laughable. And this is where I'm like, if you want to see a team that, and look, with all due respect, these are professional rugby players. They've been through a lot in terms of, you know, their salaries and their contracts and not knowing whether they're going to be employed next season. And I know how painful that can be, and I do sympathize with them. But this is when you can say, this is crap. This was nonsense. It was shite. How do you lose? How do you lose to a team that has 12 players on the field?
Nah, it doesn't make sense.
And you have, what, at most 8 defenders on their feet to defend against you. And you score one try. One. it's scary, man. It's really, really scary. If I was in the WRU, I'd be worried. I'd be really worried and have a look, take a really close look at my structures and say, what the hell is going on? We need to they need to fix it from under 16. They need to change. And it's going to be a slow process. There is no golden generation. Because generally, if you have a golden age group, which can tide you over while you're sorting your systems out. You know, I mean, Ireland did it. Ireland had a golden generation, had a golden group in terms of O'Driscoll, Shane Horgan, you know, Paul O'Connell, Donnac O'Callaghan, you know, they had Ronan O'Gara. They had a golden generation backed, mainly built on that Munster team and some sprinklings of Leinster, who then started to fill it up. But they had a golden generation that got them winning trophies while they were sorting things out down below. And that is why they have the conveyor belt of talent that they have right now. Wales do not have that golden generation. So they're screwed.
Well, you know? they're hanging on to the few players that are left over from 2015 and 2019 campaigns. And, you know, and it's unfortunate. I believe that Pivac was not great, but... You know, they've definitely regressed when they went back to Gats, and it's
they should never have fired that dude, because what he had done at Scarlets, he was trying to get them to play with creativity and be innovative in the way they play. Because defenders are tight now. You can't just unlock them. You're not the Springboks, right? The Springboks even have decided, maybe let's look at getting some guys with a bit of creativity in our midfield to try and balance things up a little bit. You know, even they've even were like, the game's going a particular way. You know, Wales skipped the opportunity. 2006, 2007, Wales by 8 pieces when they were winning grand slams and they were on top of the world. You know, they didn't capitalize. They didn't capitalize, and actually, the victory lap was far too long.
Yeah.
They didn't take it for what it is. And Scotland is at risk of doing that, because right now they've got their golden generation. But their under-20s are playing Tier 2. They're playing the Junior World Rugby Trophy. And they didn't win. They didn't qualify. They got belted by Uruguay. And then they got belted by who? They got belted by Uruguay, and then they didn't qualify. They're playing there next year, JWRT.
Tough out here, bro. It's tough.
So, Wales are... Well, this is because Wales were in denial. This didn't just start a couple of years ago, this year. This nonsense we're seeing now from Wales started 10 years ago. They didn't see 10 years ago. They didn't think 10 years ago to maybe let's revamp. Even further back, 15 years ago, maybe let's fix things. Let's revamp and get our age grade to the point where we're now producing players that play with creativity, with spark, with so on. Look at Ireland, right? You can move any. You can put... Look at the depth that they have. Look at the depth that that Irish team has. Look at the pack. It doesn't matter if you start with Van der Flier, Doris, and even Ryan Baird can play six. You can start with those guys. Take them out. You can then start with Conan. You can start. They've got depth because they worked hard on building depth, building complete players with a well-rounded skill set. They worked on it. And guess what? Guess who's done it? Who's done the exact same thing? Take a wild guess. And they're number one in the world right now. I'll give you a clue.
France.
How many junior world championships have they won on the trot now? How many?
This will be
three.
But this is the third. Is it on the trot?
Three.
Yeah.
No, it's not three on the trot, guys.
Three.
It is.
Are you for real?
Yep. Yeah. So we went when we were at Gracoma, we took the boys, we took the young fellas to go watch New Zealand under-20 versus France under-20.
Oh, man, they were murdered that late game. Oh, my goodness.
Let me tell you that France have the balance right between power, precision, and just creativity and imagination. And they've got this ruthlessness about them. That is insane. And you're looking at, and you look at from the structural point of view, how they're doing this. They've got all their players in that under 20 team have had exposure at top 14.
Yeah. Because the scrum off, man, the scrum off was brilliant. Crap, I watched him play and I was just like, this kid is special.
He's phenomenal. He's the next DuPont, but he's going to have to wait how many years till DuPont is like, I've had enough of just being the absolute GOAT. He's going to have to wait how many years. But they've got the conveyor belt of talent because they realized, and they realized like, no, we need to fix some things here, right?
Yeah.
And all that hard work, and this fixing things started 16 years ago. I want you to know this. It started 16 years ago in their own World Cup that they hosted, when they got belted on the first night by Argentina, and then they got belted again by Argentina.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, like this whole renewal and you know, patience enough to look, you know, to have the patience to actually say to yourselves, we don't need to win now, but we are building something for the future. That's something that seems to be more and more important, as long as you then have the structures to maintain that over a long period of time. You know, you can really see it in some of, you know, I mean, teams like Australia. Unfortunately, Australia, because of sheer numbers alone between rugby and rugby league, they struggle. But those are some of the countries that need to be a bit more careful with regards to how they manage their age group structures to ensure that they can get that continuity, to ensure that they get the right quality of players.
100%.
And it's becoming more and more important, man. It's becoming more and more important.
Oh, another giant that's starting to wake up, Italy. Look at how Italian under 20 team has been on fire for a while. They've been pushing guys hard for a long time. Then you get the Capuozzos, you get the Lamaros coming through. Dude, that Italian team is no joke. And look at the creativity that those guys are playing with. They have revolutionized. They are so creative in their attacking structure. And again, I don't know what they were thinking when they fired Kieran Crowley, but...
Is he gone?
I think he's gone.
No, dude, he's leaving after the World Cup.
Oh, yeah. But still, they need to make sure they pick the right person, because then now you've got some players there.
Dude, there's something special brewing there as well.
There's something special. And they signed, and guess who's now playing for Italy? Guess who's in their World Cup squad? That England. Eddie Jones had him in his
camp. Oh, man. What's his name? Odogwu. I was quite surprised when I saw it. I'm like, what? I was like, no, this must be another one. Something has happened. He was called up into the squad, and then what happened? Didn't get any game time.
He didn't get any game time. There was an entire Six Nations when he was just there, but he was just training. He was just there and just training. Now you've missed the most exciting back that you had. Because Odogwu was highlight reel. Exciting.
Yeah.
Now guess where he's gone? To Italy.
So if
he didn't play, he's not considered to be ineligible.
He didn't get a cap, bro. He was just chilling in camp, training.
Okay, but I guess it's a while ago, because remember, it's a 3-year stand down.
He didn't play. He played under 20s.
He didn't play Autumn Nations.
He didn't.
Wow. Huh. Wow.
So you got to ask yourself, right? And is there enough forward thinking in these teams that are struggling? It's no surprise that they're struggling, because there is no forward thinking.
No, there isn't.
I sincerely hope that Gregor Townsend, actually, after he's done his time, after this World Cup, that they actually make him director of rugby for Scotland, and then he fixes the calamity that is going on with the under-20s. And you actually have pure Scottish talent, born and bred. Pure, born and bred Scottish talent coming through. Yes, because as much as yes, it is a global village and all of that. But, mate, we got it. You've got some... there's a Stuart Hogg running around there somewhere. There's another Finn Russell somewhere.
Dude, I'm not even rating any of those players. Blair Kinghorn. Oh, man, dude. Him at 15 at the moment is cooking. He is cooking, dude. I'm so impressed by him.
I prefer the other guy, actually. But Kinghorn also, again, that's just horses for courses, right? Yep. You know what I mean? But there needs to be that conveyor belt. And with a lot of these countries, you look at it and you're like, okay. Yeah, it's tricky here. It's really, really tight here. I mean, France at the moment are on fire because they've built that system and they've worked that system. And they've churned out these players of just quality, you know? And it's scary. I mean, that result against Australia was no surprise. That mauling.
Yeah, but I think, you know what, they're looking, okay, with regards to France at the moment, they look a lot more vulnerable now leading into the World Cup than they did, call it a year ago. They're not seeming as invincible as they were a year ago. And I think partly because of what Scotland definitely did show, there's an element of the way you need to play. And the thing about it as well is I don't know how many teams can play the way Scotland played against them, where, you know, they play, like you said, there's layers to the attack. And those layers are able to break that line. Okay, that's the first thing. Secondly, from a defensive point of view, they've got that the way they're stopping that the ball in play is absolutely amazing, and it's those one up tacklers that go up and they're making that hit, and that's not easy for every team to do, you know. And it's going to be very interesting to see whether or not a team like the All Blacks can. We know that the All Blacks on their day are always going to be good. But I don't know if they would allow, or if I don't know if they can do it the way the Scots did it. And I guess there's an element of the Scots don't have as much pressure as other teams. So a New Zealand against France, New Zealand will always be under pressure. A Springbok against France, they'll always be under a bit of pressure. Even Ireland, they have a lot more pressure. So certain decisions that another team would make, they cannot just, you know, make it in the blink of an eye. You know what I mean? I don't even get what you're saying.
No, I get you. I just think it's the old adage, isn't it? Styles make fights, right? Make fights. And I think the blessing with this French team is that to actually beat them, you have to be creative. You can't try and choke them and stifle them because of the sheer size of their pack and efficiency of their pack. Again, the top 14. You know, you've got monstrous packs. So you can't just you can't bludgeon them to death because it's not going to work. They've got 140 kilo props running around that park. You have to be creative. You have to have, like you rightfully said, you've got to have layers to your attack. You've got to make people think. You've got to turn shoulders. You know, you've got to manipulate the back three, find space, kick into that space, create space. You've got to be able to do that. If you don't, you're in trouble. You're in serious trouble. And that's the beauty of France. That's what I love about France right now is you can't beat them by being anti. You need to play. You actually, you know. On Vajoué, you've got to play. You've got to play against them. You've got to, because if you don't, you're done. If you don't actually go and run at them and use those layers and use those options, you're going to just go one up, runner. It's fine. Bang, I hit you. You come back, I hit you. You come back, I hit you. You come back, I hit you. I turn you over. We shift the ball two or three channels. Winger comes up, we kick in behind. Either Pernod beats you in a foot race, or he tackles you into touch, or it rolls into touch 5 meters outside your line. Now you're under pressure. Now you're under territorial pressure. What you going to do? So yeah. It's fantastic. France are actually a blessing to this World Cup, in my opinion, because you're forced to have to play to beat them. You can't just beat them by just being boring. You can't. Because they'll beat you at that too. So it's very innovative and it's very interesting. And look, as much as we as yeah, Ntamack is a big loss. Yeah, Jalibert and Hastoy, you know, you're gonna have to be smart in how you use them. Which game you start Jalibert in, and which game you start Hastoy in.
What they've got in their favor is that, you know, they're coming into a side where, you know, it would have been very easy with Intermark there. You know, teams would have had that element of, okay, we really need to watch out for him and we need to make sure we contain them. The fact that, I mean, Jalibert is definitely not, he's not an unknown entity. However, I think he has a lot more, he'll probably have a lot more freedom to play because he's not as recognized as Intermark. I think he's a good player, hell of a good player. But I think he may be good for France in this World Cup. He may be the game changer.
But that's you're forgetting Hastoy. Hastoy is the stability. Jalibert is the jouer. Hastoy is the stability. Either or. Like I said, it doesn't matter who starts.
There's been talk about is
that you use them right, the two of them.
Yeah, I guess so. That's the thing. Yeah, I guess when you put it like that, yeah.
We're running short on time here, so let's just go to the main one. I'm giving you, in fact, I'll start with HB. HB, you've got 2 minutes. Post-mortem of the All Blacks game.
Three. All Blacks having a bad day. That's all.
Two. One.
That was a bad
timer
day.
Starts now. Is that all you've got to say?
No, it's not all I've got to say. The All Blacks had a bad day. That's pretty much the gist of it. But when you look at how SA are looking, SA are on the trot. I was pretty surprised that Siya Kolisi was playing at that level, but I'm guessing he's all healed. His physio is all done. He's properly in there. SA backline, yeah, man, I don't know. That's some newfound magic. I hope it lasts, because if it doesn't, I don't know who they've got in the pocket, if they pick up any more injuries during this campaign of theirs. All Blacks, just fuck, man. Like, why would you allow Rico to do dumb stuff like that? What was Rico trying to do?
Yeah. Rico? Wait a minute. Mate.
What did Rico do?
Rico did nothing.
What?
No. He played, but what did he do? Rico didn't do anything. That's just the problem.
It felt like the All Blacks on Friday did not want to challenge SA. Some of the passing was terrible. Some of the options were looking like guys were desperate to try and make magic come out of the air. And not everyone was switched on. That interception, I think it was the first or second try, was just unnecessary. You've been held. Just take the ball down. Don't try and force that pass. You're passing to someone who's asleep. They're not even looking at you. It was just like the All Blacks. Yeah, I think it's good that it happened, by the way, because at least guys can wake up and be a bit more prepared for the next games that are coming up and for the World Cup itself. So it was a bad day in the office, but it'll be good.
Oh, wow. And you did that all with 10 seconds to go. To spare. Nice one. Good man. Dragon, you're up.
I may need more time. Okay, no, quick one.
2 minutes, let's go.
For me, I think it comes down to homework. South Africa did their homework. They learned a lot from that loss. All right. I said to, you know, and this is what happens when you play a team so many times and you go through things, you begin to understand how they play and you begin to see where your opportunities are. So what I'll look at what you spoke about there, HB, where you were talking about the All Blacks making a lot of mistakes. That's what pressure does, right? Pressure puts you into those situations where you make mistakes. But the important thing to note there was that when you look at those that seemed like loose passes, it's important to look at how the defense was working. South Africa learned from the first game, because what they did was they were killed by the support play that the All Blacks were playing, right? The offloads killed them. There was great support lines in the first game. If you look at this game, it wasn't that they were throwing loose passes. It's that the box was closed down the support.
Excuse me.
The box were in those spaces, closing down those support channels, preventing those runners from running those lines. And they played it wonderfully. And when you look at it, if you review it, they planned very well for that game. They knew exactly what they were going to execute. The All Blacks, yes, they played. They also made a number of mistakes. They did not adapt. I think that was the most important thing. They failed to adapt. But that was made even more difficult by the card that they, the red card in the end. But I believe it's what sums it up for me is they did their homework. The box did their homework and they got the result. Going into the World Cup, it's good because now the All Blacks get to learn, right? I don't know if South Africa will be able to pull that off again against the same All Black side. Hopefully they
will. You're done, mate.
What the fuck?
What kind of
alarm is that, dude?
We have to keep decorum here, right? We have to keep decorum here. Look, I think you were right about the box getting in the passing lane quite a lot. But at the same time, dude, you got to adapt. You see someone's in the passing lane, and this is the problem with that. I think to say they were asleep, there was no urgency. In my opinion, there was no urgency because, again, New Zealand weren't winning the races, because when Jordy Barrett actually made that sort of half break and he looked up, someone should have won the race into that space. But also as Jordy, because and again, when you're coaching young fellas, you always tell them, if you think you can offload, do not throw the offload unless you can see his entire body unobstructed. That's when you can throw the offload. But Jordy could not see an unobstructed body. He would have seen Aronson in the passing lane, so why force it? You know? So it was that sort of stubbornness, and this is something that always comes back to bite the All Blacks in times, is that they don't react. They remain stubborn. They have faith in their game plan to the point where once your game plan's been figured out, you've got to go, you've got to go plan B, and you've got to find another way around it. Now, the problem was that they had so much faith in their game plan, they just stuck with it. Sometimes you got to reevaluate, you know, and it doesn't mean you're throwing in the towel. You just got to reevaluate. And also, when the Barretts aren't playing well,
the whole team sucks.
The whole team suffers. Like, how are you doing a crossfield kick in your 22 and you kick it out on the 4? But you're in your 22. Yes, we want expensive and we want exciting, but is that time?
That's 2 minutes.
I thought you were going to give yourself some more time.
No,
I'm definitely,
because I'm making sense. I'm making sense.
How do you make sense of that rubbish?
The All Blacks, it's a good thing that they got a humbling and a pasting. They needed that. But if I was a Springbok supporter, look, I wouldn't get too carried away, because there was a point where these guys had 13 men and y'all struggled to score. You went to your mall, you couldn't maul it over against 6 dudes. Saga, please, let's just calm down. Right?
South Africa have got some major depth.
They do.
Sorry.
No, mate, they've got depth, right? But again, you tell me, how much time did they spend? They had 10 minutes when they were playing against 13 guys.
Yeah, the first 12 minutes of the game, they were in the All Blacks 22 pretty much.
But did they protect?
They failed to convert that. Yeah.
They failed to convert that. Then when the two yellow cards happened, they couldn't. They eventually managed to convert. You know, eventually.
Yeah. So it wasn't like yeah.
Yeah. The while South Africa were bloody good, I still have a couple of reservations in my opinion. And look, defensively, Jordy Barrett. Again, the reason why he was so poor defensively is that he was not keeping his feet when he went into the collision. He kept coming off his feet in the collision. I mean, the one break Esterhazen made, dude completely dove in to make the tackle. He didn't hold his feet long enough to make the hit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That clean break that Esterhazen got, yeah.
Yeah, but these are small adjustments, right? These are little things that you can fix. And I just... Yeah, the All Blacks, and it shows. It shows. If you wanted to see anything that, yes, Frizzell, yes, he's got his past, which again he gets panned for by a lot of people, which, you know, rightfully so. But that dude, and that is go forward personified. I actually think that where Foster and the All Blacks coaching staff got it wrong was the bench, were the replacements. Josh Lord was not the guy. You needed a Sammy Penny Finau in there for the simple fact that Finau is the closest thing that they have going forward
to
Frizzell. So when things weren't working with Jacobson as well as they should have been, because Jacobson still concrete shoulders, he tackled his heart out, but there was a point in the game where you needed go forward.
Well, when you look at the balance,
Tupou Vaa was not going to give that to you. Finau would have given that to you. Josh not going to give that to you.
The only other way would have been a total rejig and they would have played Scott at six. That would have been the closest to that. But you're right. Finau is the only other player of that mold. And, you know, they've got to be bold about it, right? They've got to be bold enough to make those calls. Yes, he's green. He still needs to do time. But in situations like they find themselves now, they need to make those calls early and give the guy a shot, because come quarterfinals or semifinal, Frizzell is injured again, because again it's a hamstring injury. We don't even know if he's going to make it back in time, right? But you haven't given this guy enough game time, and you're going to have to try. You know, this the balance is not right. The balance was not right, particularly the only other way. Well, I'm lying. Not the only other way. RD maybe, but he's not going to give you that kind of go forward. All he does is he adds an element of it, but nowhere close to that.
Guys, let RD, and you know, when people keep complaining, no, Sam Kane shouldn't be playing seven. It's just
Terminator is a boss, bro.
It's just listen to it though. Listen to this. It's about the balance of the back row. It's not necessarily the position. The only reason why Kane isn't playing eight is that he's not explosive as RD off the base of the scrum, off the back of the scrum. But what Kane adds is balance. What Kane added was balance, and what Frizzell, because when you've got Kane, Frizzell, and RD, that's a balanced back row. Frizzell, big hits, big carries. Kane, consistent engine, consistent work rate, consistent tackling. Consistent. Even if he doesn't make the eventual, he'll still slow the motherfucker down, right? And his work rate in terms of in that space of tackling and making the tackle allows, guess who? Allows who the luxury to pick and choose and select which breakdown to go and pilfer. So it's about balance. That's about balance. This is why it'll never work with RD, Papali'i, and someone and Frizzell. Because Papali'i thinks he's an RD.
But he
plays like an RD. He tries to carry too much. He doesn't do enough of the dirty stuff. And that's the problem. You know, and when people are looking at this, you got to look at combinations. The best combination back row they and it showed the best combination back row they have is RD, Frizzell, and Sam Kane. That's the best combination back row. The best combination second row, stick to the old fuckers, right? Brody and Whitelock, done. Because Brody Retallick is less of a risk in terms of the penalties and the yellow cards and the red cards.
And you know what? I called it before the game. The guys I was sitting with, and I told them, I was like, you know what? I hate to say it, but Scott Barrett is due a red card. It's been too long. And lo and behold, I swear to you, if I can give you the guys' numbers, and they'll tell you exactly for the game.
Whoa, bro, come on. We believe you, liar.
I'm telling you, I knew it was going to happen. Emotions, dog. That's the thing. Mr. Enforcer, All Blacks Enforcer. Get out of here.
So that's it. I think, you know, Murphy's Law came into effect here. You know, whatever could go wrong, did go wrong.
More than wrong. It was a calamity.
No, it was one of those. And I think South Africa were great and they were awesome and they played really well. The All Blacks were shite. It was shocking. But that's what needed to happen. And I think they needed a humbling. They went into this clean sheet. France will be a very tall order. They more than likely will probably lose that game too. And that's okay. That's okay.
It doesn't mean anything to lose your first game anymore. We've learned
it
that.
It just means they get a quarterfinal against who? Either Ireland or...
Be careful what you say. Because,
why are we planning to do this easy path to the final stuff again? Everyone must be massacred. Come on.
It's not easy path, but it's reality. You're playing against a French team that is playing at home, first game of the World Cup. They've had all this momentum. Emotion comes into play. They are going to come in guns blazing. Why would you risk your injuries trying to go fire with... Guys, if in the 60th minute... It's not looking great. It's okay.
Take your own. We'll make it up against Italy and Namibia.
Guys.
No. It's not the reality.
I understand your reality and that. What I'm saying, that form of strategic planning and, you know what, let's take our losses, is not what the game should be about. The game should be about give it 110%. If you lose, then it happened. There's a Rubicon line of 66 minutes. At the 66 minutes, if we're not getting what we want, then
let it go.
Turn the engine down to 50% and let me jog this out. Sad.
HB, what you have to understand is, right, yeah, give it, by all means, give it 110%, but there comes a point where you're like, okay, so we are winning this game. It's looking quite dicey. Do we then risk injury for later on in the tournament? Because remember, God, this is not just, it's not, this isn't, it's not King of the Ring, where you have to win every single fight to get
it's
to
a
the
marathon.
Fight.
It's not a sprint.
It's a marathon. So you've got to be smart.
You didn't stop trying to convince me because I'm thinking it's not going to fly.
You know, it's similar to the Springboks, but unfortunately they're in a very difficult group, right? Springboks' first game is going to be against Scotland, right? I would rather play Scotland in a second game. You know what I mean? Where you know they're going to come out in that first game and give it everything, absolutely everything they've got. Because they win that first game, they've got to deal with an enemy that they know they can take on a good day, right? Which is Ireland. That will be their next task. But the Springboks are taking on that tricky enemy who's going to be high on that first game jitters, and they really want to come and prove a point. So there's a lot happening in this World Cup. It's probably the most exciting World Cup that we've watched in some time.
HB, I'm telling you, if France beat the All Blacks in their first game, they're not going to play so well in the second game. That game, their performance will keep going down. Right?
Yeah.
As they get through the group stages. Then they'll play the quarterfinal. They'll scrape through. But then semifinal, there's a very big chance they'll get murked. Proper. So, again, New Zealand need to be smart. The All Blacks need to be smart and say, okay, look, so we got some guys carrying some injuries here. Let's manage our depth here. By all means, first 66, 70 minutes, go for it. But this isn't the final. The final is in like a month's time.
Yeah.
So let's make sure we're ready.
It's a final. Long run to the final. It's a bloody long run to the final. The full month.
But you've got much bigger fish to fry. And it's not being defeatist. It's not throwing in the towel. It's being strategic and thinking, yeah. So I win this game. Yeah, we win this game. We leave. We come out with two or three injuries. Yeah, okay. But we win the game. We top the group. Then we get dealt in the quarters. Was it worth winning that first game and letting Oaks get injured?
No.
No.
So at 66 minutes, HB, they're going to...
We've called 66 minutes, right? 66 That's the Rubicon line.
That's the line.
That's the line, brother. That's the line. Well, anyway, I think we're going to wrap it up for this evening. Because if we don't stop now, we'll be talking all evening. Guys, thank you so much. It is so great to be back. Yeah. Tune in. This is going to be a fun few weeks. We're going to enjoy the World Cup. We're going to enjoy the All Blacks taking their rightful place at the top of the game, top of the mountain. And, yeah, and talk a lot of shit while doing it. So, yeah, please, any comments, negative, positive, agree, disagree, please send them all to HB. His number is 077.
hey, don't dox me.
Hannibal.
Send them to HB. Thank you, everybody, once again. It's great to be back. Be part of the community. Again, like I said, HB will answer all your questions. He'll even tell you where Dragon lives so you can go and shout at him. yeah, and we'll catch you next time. Thank you, everybody. Goodbye.
Cheers, guys. Cheers.
Later.